This podcast of Bookworm is a production of KCRW Santa Monica and KCRW.com. Support for KCRW podcasts comes from the Southern California Lexus dealers.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
You are a human animal. You are a very special breed. For you are the only animal who can think, who can reason, who can read.
The cow. From KCRW Santa Monica, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. Today I'm happy to have as my guest Mary Gaitskill, and we're going to talk about her new novel, Veronica. She's the author as well of two books of short stories, Bad Behavior and Because They Wanted To, and a previous novel, Two Girls, Fat and Thin. Now, I read that you had started work on Veronica and put it aside for some time. What was it that you discovered that enabled you to complete it?
I'm not sure. But if you would like me to talk a little bit about when I started it.
Sure.
I initially wrote it in 92, and I forced myself to write it very quickly. Because I usually am very slow and meticulous, and I think I was feeling irritated and impatient with that, and I wanted it to be out and more immediate, and the emotions to be more hot on the page rather than so careful like I usually am, but the problem with that was I didn't know what to do with it afterwards because I it was really rough. And I wasn't used to working with material. It was rough. But also it was emotionally – it was almost like it was emotion and I had knowledge of in my gut, but it hadn't, like, come up to the word level. You know the movie Splendor in the Grass?
Mm-hmm.
You know the scene where the teacher calls on Natalie Wood, who's been kind of lax in the class and kind of preoccupied with, and the teacher calls on her very sternly to say what she thinks the poet means with the leaves, the lines that involve splendor in the grass. And Natalie Wood stands up and she says, I think what he means, and she just runs out of the room. And it's such a powerful scene because she is not able to say it in words, but she knows it in her body. She's living it. And she knows it better than the teacher, but she can't say it. And that's kind of like something in this book was something that when I was 36, which isn't that young really, but I knew on a bodily level, but I didn't have the words for. And the words, the things that I was trying to describe were often things that I was seeing in images that were very hard for me to put words to in a way that I found right. And just somehow, and you know, 8 years later maybe, or no, it was longer than that. I wrote 92, and 10 years later almost, something clicked, and I knew what to do.
Now, one of the things that this character seems to know is that she's learned compassion over her life. She had run away from home in the 60s. She'd moved first to San Francisco, goes back home, wins a modeling contest and lives in Paris, comes back home kind of devastated, moves to New York, working temporary jobs. And the book, although it's space with Veronica, is proportionately small, seems to be about a kind of mercy or compassion that she learns. Do you feel that has arrived to you as a writer with this character as well?
Yeah, I do. It was not that I was devoid of that, but there was something about, I just think honestly it's a matter of getting older. When you become older, you become much more aware of your own vulnerability and of other people's. You're likely to have lost several friends, parents probably. And it's almost like the reverse process of what I was describing. Things you know in your head when you were young, you feel so strongly in your body and in your emotions. And like I use the word pity in the book at the end, and some people have had a problem with that. Pity is a word that's taken to be almost scornful. I think if you look it up in the dictionary, it actually means the same thing as compassion, but it's come to have a quite negative connotation. And somebody asked me that in an interview, why do you use the word pity? Doesn't that mean condescension? And I said, we're all to be pitied, finally. You know, it doesn't mean we aren't all also to be admired or loved or respected, but ultimately we're all to be pitied.
Now, the heroine and speaker of the book, Allison, comes to an understanding that the world she's lived in has in fact threatened her father, and that her father, who has loved her, has wanted mostly to save her from this world. And it's a world that Allison is kind of addicted to, even when she's older and feels that she's lost her looks and her health. She feels it was the most vibrant part of her life and the thing that she yearns most for, the world of fashion. And I felt, in a way, similarly, looking at these books, I thought, Mary Gaitskill, for all that she's become more and more accomplished as a writer, it's this world that's held her eye, you know, as if it has somehow more to say than the world of knowledge or art or writing. And I wondered why it's held you.
Well, I don't know that the world of it, you mean the world of glamour and fashion?
Modeling, fashion, beauty, style.
Well, I don't know if I agree that it has held my attention. I mean, I think I know what you mean. I don't know if it's quite, because I've never written about people who are quite so glamorous. I mean, the people in my previous books, particularly two girls, are rather grimy.
Mm-hmm.
That's not a nice word to use for them, but they certainly are not glamorous people. I often write about people who are quite clumsy and kind of like the ordinary person. But they're people who, I think what you mean, or maybe what you're getting at is, even though they may be ordinary and clumsy and just, you know, just ordinary, they often have a very ideal idea of the world. Like I can think of the story in Bad Behavior, Romantic Weekend, where they're on this kind of the couple that are off on a trip together, or they're in a grimy situation. They're going to his grandmother's apartment, and it's a crummy apartment. But she has this beautiful idea of what the sexual experience is going to be and what they're going to be to each other. And the girl in Secretary in the same collection, even though she's working in this crummy office and having a kind of sordid experience, imagines it as something quite beautiful. In her dreams, it becomes something beautiful. So maybe it's more like the ideal, not so much necessarily fashion people, but a romantic ideal is very strong. So I don't think I've so much been focused on fashion exactly, but it's more like that romantic ideal is embodied in the fashion world in this particular book. And Veronica, too. To me, that's, I see a connection between Veronica and Allison, that even though Veronica is a very homely woman, or actually, truthfully, I present her in the book homely, but I didn't even see her. I just saw her as being really ordinary looking, but makes herself kind of grotesque with the makeup and the hair and the bow ties. But she also is after an ideal of some kind in her way of dressing and presenting herself. She definitely has ideas of, you know, form and shaping and putting herself out in kind of an artifice. And even though you might, from Allison's point of view or the traditional fashion point of view, she doesn't succeed at all, it nonetheless is going for a sort of exquisite ideal, which she also, I meant to convey, even though I don't pay perhaps enough attention to the relationship with Duncan, she's also going for there. And almost because it's unrealizable with him is part of what makes it beautiful to her.
The being drawn to situations of terror, or at least situations that I consider terrifying, is also characteristic of these people. And I wondered whether to some extent the formal intelligence of the writing is not a kind of counter form of the terrifying quality of this romantic ideal.
I guess in the counter to me in Veronica, the counter to it was in the softness that Allison as an older person feels, even though this kind of, I call it her heaven, but it's like I'm using heaven in a very distorted, I mean hell, basically. She talks about her heaven. But to me, the counter to it was in her experiences, even though she doesn't have that many friends, it seems, like when she goes to visit her friends who were living in this kind of broken-down group home and are ill themselves with HIV and hepatitis, both of them, still are having a very, it's a very present and very feeling way of living in the world. They take care of children. They make the man makes a certain kind of art, and he helps other men, you know, the homeless guys that come and work for him. And like Allison is able to look at her friend, and who is, you know, a middle-aged woman who is poor and not aging well, and look at her and say, her friend says, "What are you thinking?" And she's not able to say it, but she's thinking that you're beautiful. And I almost became the kind of person that wouldn't see that. I miss being that kind of person by a hair. That she is able to be in the real flawed, broken down human world and see that it's beautiful and feel it. So to me, that's the counterweight of the more kind of seductive demonic, which is not without its. I don't, you know, they always say the devil gets the best lines in Milton's Paradise Lost, and I didn't mean to make the demonic, romantic ideal all bad either in this. I did mean to give it its due, so to speak.
I'm speaking with Mary Gateskill about her novel Veronica, which is published by Pantheon. I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from the studios of KCRW. We'll be back after this short break. I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Mary Gateskill about her new novel, Veronica. I think that the character Veronica also represents for her a midpoint. She gets invited to dinner at Veronica's house and meets people, all of whom, by her standards, are not physically superb, but who have educated their senses to a certain kind of articulate level, and she sees, I think, among them that there isn't an external judge.
Right.
They are themselves the creators of a kind of talk and a kind of knowledge of opera, of the arts, and they have started to make for themselves a place where some external judgment is not defining their lives.
Right. It's a place where there is that feel, there's glamour and beauty, but it's on their own terms. It's on terms that they've created themselves. And she does like that very much. And it's something that her father has kind of tried to do, but hasn't really been able to connect with the world enough. Actually, their art, I mean, music anyway, is very important in the book as an art form and as a way to experience depth in life and in emotions. But yeah, with those people is where she sees it, and with Veronica too, with the appreciation of opera particularly, and movies. But yeah, the difference would be that it's not like a perfectionistic, rigid idea of glamour. It's a more playful and fluid created glamour that includes more humanity.
Well, it's very moving to me because I noticed when, during that section, how to put it, I feel as if these books in some way judge me, not in entirely pleasant ways, that all over there are posters that say, old, stay out, you know, fat, stay out.
Really?
Yeah, because, you know, by page two, she's noticing a fat old guy on a bicycle, and I don't necessarily think that those are the terms in which people view the world, that those choices of what she sees is what she's looking for in a peculiar way. And so when she has dinner with Veronica's friends, I felt, oh, these are the kinds of people that I know. For better or worse, we talk about literature as if we were ourselves writing it, as if it meant everything to us, life and death. It's given us our passions, our belief. We have, as a group, irrational anger when a favorite author or musician isn't doing the work we expect them to do. And, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And, you know, she exposes the degree to which we put together our world out of the things that we love and want and fail to attain. And so the sadness of that quality. And finally, she's in a world in which she seems to be able to assess her value by her ability to feel pity, sorrow for other people, and to even, with John, someone who's once been a photographer for her, to look and say, you know, you have an office now, you have a baby, you have a life, this is your dream. And he says, what is your dream? And she says, I dream of being able to sleep and for my arm to stop hurting. And she's come into a place where whatever has hectored her and given her a hunger for values that she can never attain, somehow, something, pain, death, disorder, something's put that on hold, and she's feeling a whole different set of things.
Right. I'm terribly sorry if you felt that way about the other books. I didn't mean them that way.
I've always been frightened of them.
Do you think for that reason?
Scared of a world in which the only value has been that assessment of whether things reach the romantic ideal, which is a dark ideal. Almost as if I would say to myself sometimes, I don't belong here. Not thank God I don't belong here, but like, gee, I see how attractive this kind of thing can be for people. Like wanting to be a very intense junkie, you know, that somehow or other the need to be in and on the dark side, because it's where the things are happening, and learning not to have to be there. What a struggle. And I think that's, in many cases, what these books are about, giving up a idea of culture that's entirely based upon certain kinds of deprivation, masochism, levels of cruelty. And yet these things have become utterly attractive to the people yearning for them.
Yeah, and I think it's odd that you say you felt shut out of them, because I often feel shut out of the social world, period. I've always, well, not, I feel actually more at home in it now, but Like when I first wrote Bad Behavior, I was shocked that it got received as kind of this example of the ultra hip, because that was so not what I was. I mean, it was like, I remember a guy who knew me from college, an older man who ran a used bookstore and who I used to talk to about my writing, and who was much more helpful, incidentally, than any teacher I ever showed anything to. But he met me maybe 10 years after Bad Behavior came out, and he remarked that I'd changed, and I said, in what way? And he said, when I first met you, you really didn't know what was going on. You were like somebody from another planet, and you were trying very hard to figure it out. And because of that, you could see things that other people didn't see because you were trying so hard. And that's how I wouldn't go so far as to say other planet, but I felt very shut out of things. I didn't understand what people were talking about. And like when I wrote Bad Behavior, I was around things that could be considered hip. I mean, New York is pretty, you know, open. That's kind of was the great part about New York in the 80s. You could go out places that you might not think you could go or might not think you belonged and just be there and see what happened. But I felt such a sense of not belonging, and I wanted so much to belong to worlds that I imagined as being ideal. And then when I gradually did kind of get more of a sense of belonging, I realized they weren't at all. And it was good that they weren't. You know what I mean? So maybe that's what you're picking up. And I think a lot of American culture is like that now. It creates a feeling of this perfect world. And I tried to describe this in Veronica without being didactic about it, but this desire for a perfect world without illness, without suffering, without ugliness, without clumsiness. And I think that it's still many people believe that that world exists somewhere. And it doesn't. And it's a very cruel illusion.
Yes, it's not a world I would want to live in. And as it arrives more and more, as more and more facsimiles or attempts to imitate it or achieve it arrive in front of our eyes, not on screens but on the streets, you know, one becomes more and more frightened, the feeling that someone wouldn't know how to be kind if life depended on it. And that, you know, I guess the kind of harrowing ability to describe those people in these books frightens me. Because I guess I'd be terrified to be with them, you know, to have someone seem to take an interest, but one who could not express fellow feeling or pity.
I wouldn't say that, like, there are people who can't. In most of the stories, there are people who can express that, or at least they try. They want to, and they do. Very much want gentleness with each other, I think. Maybe not so much in Bad Behavior, but certainly because they wanted to. But I was going to say on the other subject, when you factor in not only the presence of a false ideal world, but it's one thing to be a middle-class person looking at that, that even if you may feel shut out of it, and you may in fact be, because it doesn't exist, a poor person watching it, I mean really poor, now have in front of them constantly these images of people on TV, people in songs, musicians, like advertisements on the sides of buses, presenting a world which is not only psychologically out of their grasp, but materially completely out of their grasp. They can't even have the facsimile. And that's even more, that's about 50 times more brutal.
In Veronica, something seems to break down between the kinds of ideas that people have about one another and who they actually are. In other words, there's a certain point at which Allison has to say about her friend Veronica, she's dying. And I can't stay in California and be with her as she dies in New York. I can't pretend. I have to go back and see her and be there with her and even acknowledge that some of her behaviors are perfectly horrible, but that doesn't free me from my obligation to be there. And it seems, within the context of this book, to be a huge recognition for her. And it seems as if this book is about that as compared to the others. Someone somehow being present to the pain of life to a sufficient extent that they break through and live in it.
Right. Yeah, I would say that's true. Particularly when you consider Allison's very young, I think for young people, it's very hard for them to deal with death at all, and especially that such a terrible death and somebody being abandoned so much by her family and her friends. I think for a young person, that's particularly difficult, and a young person like Allison even more so. So, yeah, it is a huge thing for her, and that's why I think it is something that really has a profound psychological effect on her that she's not aware of until she's older.
Which is what?
Well, that she does. She becomes a human being.
Yeah.
She becomes. She loses that hard shell and that that sort of desire for a false world and becomes a human being, becomes capable of awkward, tentative, reaching out towards somebody in a real loving way.
I've been speaking to Mary Gaitskill about her novel, Veronica, recently published by Pantheon. Thank you very much, Mary, for joining me.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I like seeing you. You can read an excerpt from Veronica on the Bookworm page at kcrw.com. My associate producer is Melinda Siegel. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with production assistance from Alan Howard. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm.
Back to days of old, when knights were bold and books, 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 books. Books can be funny too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. Archived editions of this and other Bookworm programs can be found online at kcrw.com. Keyword Bookworm. Copies are available. For ordering information, call 310-450-5183.
Books, books, books can be funny too. Books make you laugh and sing. Books tell you everything. They're your treasured friends in prose and rhyme. Now it's Book of the Mouse.
You've been listening to KCRW's Bookworm. KCRW offers more than 20 podcasts, including Good Food, a weekly exploration of culinary trends, tantalizing recipes, and intriguing discoveries in food and drink. Check out the podcast of Good Food at kcrw.com.